This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue this morning on Wake Up Call. As we get rocking and rolling, we get the preview of the next week's British Open, the world's best in Scotland for the Lynx course of the Scottish Open. And then St. Andrews will be hosting the British Open. And I know we've been doing a lot of golf lately with the U.S. Open last month and then the LIV Golf Tour and its controversy. Alex Myers is going to join us from Golf Digest at 40 past the hour to preview one of the more important events in the calendar. It's not just the British Open, it's the British Open in St. Andrews, and it's not just the British Open in St. Andrews, it's 150th British Open at St. Andrews. And every single player that has come through the game has probably thought in their life, as they were a young golfer growing up, what courses they would like to win at. Pebble Beach, Augusta National, of course. Maybe Pinehurst would be one of those kind of places, but definitely St. Andrews. It's the home of golf. Jordan Spieth said something rather interesting, though, and we're going to get to that with Alex coming up again in 35 minutes, which, given the modern game, is St. Andrews too easy? It is the oldest, you know, it's one of the oldest golf courses in the world, and it's not that it hasn't been redefined and moved around a little bit and shaped through the years. Yeah, of course, but the overall layout has pretty much remained the same. The deal with St. Andrews is it's weather that can affect the golf, the playing of the golf course. And if you don't get the very troubling weather that can cause golf balls to roll into bunkers and spin sideways and all those things, then you have a very wide open golf course that can be attacked in all sorts of ways. The first hole, for example, at St. Andrews, think about if you play golf, think about the first hole at your golf course. How wide is the fairway, right? Maybe 25 yards, 30 yards, right? Maybe 40 yards. And if you're at a more generous course, maybe 50 yards, right? The first hole, the fairway is 100 yards wide. You can't miss it off the tee. You can't. And Baker Finch, though, did actually hit it out of bounds once. He completely shanked it on the first tee of the British. But it's the wind that sometimes carries it into the Swilkenburn or puts it in some of the heather. If you don't have it, it can be eaten up. So we'll talk to Alex about that. Coming up, more in the NFL. And we're also talking this morning about the death of the actor James Caan. Of course, played one of the more iconic roles in sports movie history in Brian Piccolo. And also The Program, a movie about college football. We've been talking about him this morning. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ron, this is a clip you sent me of Adam West in Batman. I haven't stopped watching it. It's 2 minutes of... Is this from a Batman movie or was it the TV show?
It's the TV show.
Okay. Like, this was so well done. It's insane. So it's the Adam West bomb disposal sequence from the show. He's got a bomb, and he's just running around trying to get rid of it. And he keeps running into nuns and baby carriages.
Marching band
and lovers on a boat. And then he's got the bomb near propane, and he can't dispose it there. I mean, this thing is hysterical.
It's the dumbest thing, but well done.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's looking to throw it in the water, and there's duckies in the water, and he can't throw it there. It's great. Oh, my God. It's so funny. So funny. I can't stop. This is 2 minutes long. It's 2 minutes of Adam West running with a bomb that's ignited.
And don't get lost on the fact that bomb in that small little fuse is still lit 2 minutes later.
Yeah, 2 minutes later.
I mean, he probably could have looked at it and just went, oh, maybe I just put the fuse out.
Yeah. And here comes Burt Ward as Robin stepping in.
Sound turned up, though, huh?
No, I don't.
Because there's one, he says a line like, you know, sometimes it's just tough for a man to get rid of a bomb. And then, of course, Burt Ward is in there right now. He's going, Batman!
Yeah, Burt Ward getting away from all the groupies that used to hang around the Batman set. Now, I got to go to work, ladies. I got to go help Batman with this bomb. What a show. What a show.
But yeah, I suck it. Came across that on Twitter, and I'm just like, you know what? You know who enjoys stuff like this?
Me.
Tony D.
I do. I do enjoy stuff like that without hesitation.
You can ridicule it all you want, but they know.
They know.
That's why they wrote it that way.
Exactly.
They said, this will be.
Adam West Batman is such a far cry from like Christian Bale's Batman. It's like not even the same.
Michael
not even
Keaton's
the same
Batman.
Person. So like Adam West Batman is a, what are you doing in that stupid suit? Right? Like, whereas Christian Bale's Batman is like, I'm kind of afraid of the guy in that suit. I don't know what that is, what he's going to do. I got two totally different approaches.
Well, I mean, you know, the Adam West Batman series, it literally was a live action cartoon.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, everything about it. I mean, from the Joker to the Riddler, I mean, they were outlandish, very bright and colorful outfits. And you're like you're supposed to be menacing and you're not.
Yeah. And but what it was, I always found amazing was like the stars that would come on that show to play villains. Like their title was special guest villain.
Yeah.
You know, Cesar Romero, Burgess Meredith, Frank Gorshin, right? I mean, it was a couple of them that were stars, and they just got to play villains in the Batman movie, right? So there you go. That's funny. Thanks for sending that to me at the break. I amused myself for a few minutes laughing at Adam
West.
Well,
the ending is perfect, too, because, you know, Burt Ward is standing over the water looking where the bomb exploded.
Right,
he's just
exactly.
Screaming Batman. The Batman just pops up behind a pile of pipes and goes, "It's okay, Robin."
Yeah. When I was doing my football research, I did stumble upon a story that was a couple of days old. I think it actually occurred just before we went to break. The New England Patriots are bringing back the red uniforms with the Patriot Pat helmet.
Yeah, Minuteman, right?
Love it. I've always liked it. I never liked the new Patriots logo. I never thought it was better than Pat Patriot. Hiking the football. I loved that logo. I wasn't a Patriot fan growing up. I was too busy bandwagging on the success of the Steelers in my younger days. But I committed to, if that's your team, that's your team. So when the Patriots got good, I never jumped on them. But I always thought their logo was fantastic. I always thought that logo was great. I'm glad they're doing it. Now, this was always confusing to me. And I'm just more of like, that doesn't make sense, even though it may make sense. I just need to find somebody to help me make sense of it, which was when the NFL was doing these throwback uniforms all the time. And it was like so cool to see the old Packer uniforms. It doesn't even look like a Packer uniform today. Or when the Bengals would have Bengals on their helmets or whatever team was just going to an old look, the creamsicle uniforms of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or something along those lines. And then they stopped doing that. And they stopped doing that because of safety regulations. They needed the helmet. They were like, we're not changing the helmet. Once we get the helmet's going to be perfectly fit. And then that's it. We're not getting new helmets, and you're not going to have double helmets. You can have the one helmet that fits, and it's unfortunate we stopped. And I went, why can't you make the helmet? You have all this money. Why don't you make the new helmet with specifications? Like, have every team go, hey, guys, we're going to be using the old jerseys anymore, and Rydell Helmets is coming in, and they'll be fitting you guys for the new, quote-unquote, old logo. So let's take some time to do that. It never made sense to me. Now, again, nostalgia is nostalgia for a reason, because it makes us feel good, even if the thing really... I mean... The swashbuckling Buccaneer on the Tampa Bay helmet back in the day, the creamsicle uniforms, right?
Yep.
The orange and white. I mean, everyone's like, oh, I love those uniforms. It's just like I am with the Patriots logo. But I'm sorry, when I see those, you know what I see when I see those uniforms? Losers. Like, that's what I see. I see losers. I see terrible teams.
Vinny Testaverde.
Yeah, I see, you know, outside of Doug Williams, the one year he led him to the NFC title game against Los Angeles before Super Bowl 14, I recognize that logo and that uniform as a franchise that loses all the time. And when I see the Buccaneers logo now, even though they hadn't had a lot of success between Super Bowl championships, I see a more winning franchise. Patriots logo is kind of the same way. I When I see the old logo, well, I mean, well, yeah, well, I guess now it's the old logo, but the newer one, the Elvis looking one, I see greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL. When I see Patriot Pat with the red uniform, I see 46-10 in Super Bowl 20 against the Chicago Bears. I see Steve Grogan and Tony Eason and Stanley Morgan and John Hanna and Russ Francis. I see those guys. I don't see Brady, Belichick, Brewski, Gronkowski. I don't see any of the, you know, Vrabel, Vinatieri. I don't see any of those guys. I see the Patriots I grew up with, which weren't all that great. So sometimes we're nostalgic because we remember that logo doesn't remind us of what the team was. It reminds us of where we were when we saw it, right? So let's go back to the Tampa Bay logo, for example. I didn't grow up in St. Petersburg or Tampa. I didn't grow up in that area. My wife did. And, you know, she was a Buccaneers fan growing up. She likes the new uniforms better than the old ones because the old ones, they were terrible. And she was pretty apathetic about them when she wasn't the biggest NFL fan, but she was growing up. She liked the Bucs, but they weren't winning when they wore those uniforms. When they changed, they started winning. But I remember that when I see that, I remember collecting football cards and watching NFL on a snowy day in November in New Hampshire and playing football with my friends and, you know, learning about the league and my sticker album that I got from Topps. And, you know, those are the memories I have when I see those. So when I see the uniform and I think of the crappy teams that represent those uniforms, it's not really where I go with that. I see those logos in the uniform and I think of the good times I had as a kid being a young NFL fan and talking football with my buddies and being really nervous about the big Steeler game coming up and will they make the playoffs? All the things kids do when they follow sports teams and they like sports and they want as much product as they can. Look, I think one of the more fun Twitter follows you can have is Super 70s Sports. Because he's not only in the 70s, but he does a little 80s too. Then there's 80s sports as well as the site he does. But he puts things on there that I go, oh my God, I had that when I was a kid. The NFL lunchbox. I had an NFL lunchbox. I think I had two or three years where I had the NFL lunchbox. It feels like every time when I was a kid and we'd go lunchbox shopping, I got the NFL lunchbox. But the thing I got every single year when I was in elementary school, it was in my stocking at Christmas, with the NFL pencils. Remember the NFL pencils?
Oh, yes.
Well, they were great. I used to love getting NFL pencils. Those are the nostalgic things that I remember when I see the throwback jerseys. I don't see great teams sometimes. I see teams where I remember what it was like to grow up and see them as I loved the league as a kid. Those pencils were great. I always got nervous because you know how you're in school? Remember when you were in school, you had the number two pencil?
Yep.
And you always had to sharpen it and yeah. It would get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then eventually you had to give up because it was too small. And you had too cramped.
Couldn't fit it in the pencil sharpener anymore.
That's right.
You had to grind it.
So you had to put the pencil in, you had to grind it. And just... For you young kids out there who never sharpened a pencil, you would grind it until you didn't feel any pressure.
Yeah.
That's how you did it. You put the pencil in and you started turning it and you felt those blades cutting through the wood of the pencil. But then there was a moment where it would release and you wouldn't feel anything grinding anymore. And then when it became easier to turn, you knew it was sharp.
And you literally created like a small blade.
That's right. Very small blade, right? So what would happen is you would take these pencils. Let's say you just had a regular pack of Dixon Ticonderoga number two pencils.
Hello. And wow.
I know.
Are you shopping for pencils right now? Are you on Amazon right now?
Some people.
My God, what a pull.
I know. What a pull is right. And I knew it as I said it, too. That's the crazy thing. That's the half-court shot you know that's going in as soon as you release it. Like, as soon as I launched that, I went, oh, yeah, that's going to land good. So you would take a brand new pencil and you'd put it in and then you would put, and then as soon as it would get low enough, like in school, you would go, oh, I got to get a new pencil. And there was nothing better than getting a new pencil. There was nothing better than that feel of a brand new pencil. Now, okay, my overall point is this. You've got these NFL pencils, right? And you had your favorite teams and you had teams you didn't care about because you got them in a box. You got them in a set. And so sometimes you'd grab the St. Louis Cardinals, and you didn't care about them, and you would use them. But when I had that Steeler pencil, oh, there was nothing worse than taking that to the sharpener. Because I knew it was just a matter of moments. It was a matter of days. It would be gone. That's it. I'd be done with the Steeler's pencil until next Christmas. They didn't sell them like... If my parents could have bought me 10 Steelers pencils, they would have just bought me that. Even though it was cool to have the different colors and the different names of the teams, it was that Steeler pencil, man, I couldn't use it. I just couldn't use it. I would use it and I'd go, oh, no. Oh, I got to take it to the sharpener. You know, the Dallas Cowboys one, I would take all the way down to the nub and throw it away. But the Steeler pencil, actually, I think my brother and I would trade. Like, I'd give him the Cowboys pencil, and he would give me his Steelers pencil, and then I'd have two. But, man, that's nostalgia. So my overall point, I know I was kind of going a little crazy there, but my overall point is these throwback uniforms, they just sometimes don't remind you of the greatness of the team, but that's not the point. They try to remind you of a time way back when you might have been young enough to just – as an NFL fan, to just buy into like everything the league had, and it was fun and you had a good time following the league. But I am looking forward to seeing Patriot Pat back, Pat Patriot back. That's a really good, it's one of the more iconic logos in sports. All right. Again, Alex Meyer is going to join us from Golf Digest. We're going to talk about the British Open coming up next week at St. Andrews. We're going to do a more deeper dive next week as well, as we get ready for the 150th British Open, excuse me there, as we continue on Wake Up Call.
Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again, Alex Myers, Golf Digest, coming up at 40 past the hour, so about 11 minutes. We're going to have him to talk a little bit about the British Open coming up next week at St. Andrews. I'm looking forward to it. I like the British Open because it's on like when our show is on. It's like we can watch the golf as it's being played during our morning show.
And we're not easily distracted at all.
No, not at all. So we'll be... I like it. I used to love the great Peter Alliss, who is a golf broadcaster for the BBC. Like they would have... And like whoever was doing it, it used to be ABC back in the day, but now I think it's NBC that's... I don't know, whoever does the British Open. And they would go... They would do a segment of block where they would do the American broadcasters, right? And then they would turn it over to their friends at the BBC, and they would take over the broadcast for a couple of hours. And Peter Alliss was like the lead broadcaster. And he had that very warm British kind of voice, and he would be like, ah, yes, the beauty of Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus on the 13th tee. Splendid. Down the fairway. Beautiful shot. Beautiful shot. Let's go to Seve on three. Like, he just this ease. And you want to talk about in broadcasting, one of the things you learn when you do games sometimes, especially on TV, is the simpler, the better. There's really no need. Like we kind of talked about this with Vin Scully, right? He was such a master at fewer words were better for the moment. And Peter Alliss was really good at that. I'll never forget one golfer. I can't even remember the golfer. I don't even think it's relevant, to be honest with you. But it was a windy day. It's one of those British Opens where the wind was picking up, and he was the player was like hitting it into the heather, and then he hit it into a bunker, and then he hit it on the green, and he was looking at like a double bogey from like 8 feet or something, and you know Peter Alliss is like this for a six double bogey, he misses the 8 footer. Oh, that's gonna hurt. That's gonna hurt. And then as he went to go putt the 1 foot putt for the seven, he does that thing where golfers get a little lazy and he hits it and it hits the cup and it lips out. So it's a 1 foot putt. He's just oops. And Peter Alliss just watches this and he just goes, what a pity. And they move on to something else. It was really just right to the point. Exactly what we were all feeling. Like this poor guy is hacking this out of hay the size of his waist in a bunker where you can't even see him. Like he's in the bunker and you can't even see him. He's trying to hit it out of there. He hits it gets it to 8 feet, three putts, including a lip out from 1 foot. And it's just, yeah, what a pity. Too bad. That's the British Open for you. So we'll talk to Alex about that coming up. So Wimbledon is going on and we're down to Rafael Nadal is out. So that's Nick Kyrgios, the bad boy of tennis, Novak Djokovic, who this year was kind of the bad boy of tennis. And then we've got Conor Berry, who's the hometown British favorite. Those are the three guys left for the men's singles title.
Yeah, Nick's just waiting.
Yeah, Nick's just waiting.
Just
easiest semifinal match of his life.
Yep.
Nadal's got a small abdominal tear. What were you telling me? 7 millimeters?
Yeah, 7 millimeter tear.
Is that a lot for abdominal tears?
I have
like,
no idea.
Even though that sounds small, in medical terms, like, no, dude. Like, two will put you to bed. Yeah. You have a 2 millimeter tear. You ain't doing anything. 7, you're practically a walking corpse.
Well, I just remember when I was passing a kidney stone.
Oh, I remember you were at Disneyland.
I was at Disneyland.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
I'm always afraid now of Thunder Mountain because of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have like a little anxiety
PTSD
when you go?
All
yeah.
the time. I mean, I've been on it since that kidney stone incident, but it just makes me nervous. But I remember how much pain I was in with the kidney stone, right? And just how uncomfortable I was. There wasn't a comfortable way to sit. I was somewhat medicated, but I didn't want to be overly medicated. But, that initial moment before I got diagnosed with the kidney stone, I was in pain.
Sure.
Sweating like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was just physically harmful. Went in, and the guy said I had a kidney stone. I'm like, oh, man, how big? Right. And he goes, this one's smaller than a grain of sand.
Smaller than a grain of sand.
Yeah. It's about the size of a grain of sand. And
I'm like,
no, you're telling me like a boulder, right? I'm passing a boulder.
You're thinking like a rock.
You said pebble. The pebbles in a fish tank. That big, right?
Right.
No. Grain of sand.
And it caused you that much pain.
And it caused me that much pain. So yeah. I'm only saying that because I don't know how much a 7 millimeter tear, how much painful that is, but I do know what a grain of sand does.
Sure.
And I think that's smaller than a 7 millimeters, right?
I've never had a 7 millimeter abdominal tear. I'm going to assume it was ridiculously painful.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Because you got to think if Nadal felt like, even if I lose in 3 sets, it's still worth going out there and maybe seeing what happens, right? Maybe he breaks a leg. Maybe he slips and breaks a leg. But for him to go, nah, I'm out. I'm done. I'm done, kids. I ain't playing. So, Nick, congratulations. Competing in the finals. Good luck. Winning winning at Wimbledon. Have a good time. Goodbye. So, yeah, that's – and poor Todd Fritz. Fritz was so close to beating Rafael Nadal in their quarterfinal match. And had he done that, he'd be playing Nick Kyrgios, and we'd actually have 2 semifinals today. But instead, we've got 1 Australian that's already in the finals on Sunday. So anyway, that's the update from Wimbledon. The Novak Djokovic-Cameron Norrie match should be going on sometime this morning. So I got to think that Cameron Norrie – I always like electric atmospheres in sports. If I don't have a dog in the fight, I kind of just like, hey, what, it's kind of cool to see crowd and how they're reacting. This guy is going to have every single television in the country on him. That every works office in all of England is going to be watching this guy go against Novak Djokovic right now. Like, I don't know what time it is in London.
Yeah,
I think there's 7 hours ahead of me in Nashville.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts.
So whatever, it's going to, we're talking like 4 o'clock over there, maybe, no, 3:30 or 3:30, 4 o'clock when it gets started. Like, everybody is going to watch this. Everyone's going to gather after work to watch this because he's the guy. He is the man in the country right now. He's going up against the world number one player, 26 years old. A win would put him in the finals at Wimbledon over the weekend. He is right now the center of every single second of attention from everybody in England as he gets ready to take on Novak Djokovic in a couple of minutes at Wimbledon. But next, staying with the British theme. Oh my God, I should have some tea and crumpets this morning. We're going to talk British Open, which is next week at St. Andrews, which is more in Scotland than anything else. But nevertheless, as we continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network alongside Ron Culver
Here's Tony D.
All right, next week is the final golf major of the year. It's the British Open or the Open Championship, depending on what you want to call it. It's going to be at St. Andrews, the 150th Open Championship. So not only is it, again, a major, but it is the major at St. Andrews, but it's 150th. There's a lot to celebrate around the sport. Alex Myers joins us from Golf Digest and our Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance, what do your home and auto have in common? They're both yours, and Progressive protects them both. Bundle today at Progressive.com. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. So again, next week is going to be a big celebration. Let's just set the scene a little bit. For those who kind of know that St. Andrews is a big deal, how big of a deal is this going to be for the 150th for this Open Championship?
Yeah, it's a huge deal for sure. Obviously, this is the oldest major championship, the oldest professional golf tournament. You throw in the fact that it's St. Andrews, a.k.a. the home of golf. They come here about every 5 years now, but they've set it up so it hits on these big milestone dates, and 150, obviously a big number. I think you've heard some of these comments this past week about just how special it's going to be. And then with everything going on right now with LIV Golf and everything else, it's kind of like this is a return to maybe a little more pure golf, the major championship at the home of golf. I think everybody's especially fired up to go back there this year.
Jordan Spieth said with the modern game, it might be that St. Andrews might be too easy. Have they been able to do anything like Augusta does? Can they change it? Can they make it harder?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we've seen that already in recent years. I mean, there are certainly days where, or at least a few hours here or there, where the wind dies down and the guys kind of go crazy there, going low. We've seen some 63s there, these past years. The wind is really the biggest defense there. Now, fortunately, there is usually a fair amount of wind. I mean, it's right near the coast there. But certainly when the wind has died down, it's not a difficult track for these guys. The greens have to be kept pretty slow because of the wind. Otherwise, the balls would be just blowing off all the time. In 2015, there actually was a wind delay, which is very rare. But for the most part, it looks like there's not going to be a lot of rain next week. So that actually could dry the course up, make it play a little faster. But yeah, they've certainly lengthened some of the holes throughout the years. I mean, this is not the same exact course that, the guys were playing in the 1800s. I mean, it definitely added some length and everything else. But yeah, for the modern player with not a lot of wind, it's going to be a wedge competition or a wedge contest, whatever Jordan said.
In terms of guys who, go into those links golf specialists from the United States, we saw Colin Morikawa win. We've seen a number of Americans win this. Zach Johnson won at St. Andrews. But do we see a lot of young guys now getting on tour and knowing how to play that style of golf? Do they learn it earlier than maybe they did back in the day?
I think they do. I think that, they have opportunities to come over and play. I know in my area up here in New York, you can be on a youth team that kind of does a Ryder Cup-esque trip over to Ireland or Scotland. So you do get maybe more opportunities to get over there and do that. But Morikawa is funny because he had never played links golf before last year, before the Scottish Open. He looked terrible at the Scottish Open, and then the next week he wins the British Open at Royal St. George's. So, either he's just a really quick learner, or obviously we know he's a special talent. So, it's not always the case where the young guys can just jump in there. I mean, look at a guy like Phil Mickelson. It took him literally decades to get good at links golf before he won the Open in 2013. He had always struggled there. We've seen other Americans struggle to the point where they even stopped going over there. But certainly now I think you're right. I think more of the younger guys do usually have a little more taste for it. Certainly a young guy like Jordan Spieth has had, other than Augusta National, the Open Championship has actually been the tournament where he's thrived the most. So he's playing well right now in Scotland as well at the Scottish Open. So, there's certainly some Americans who have adapted to it much quicker.
When we get to Augusta every year, there's, you know, no matter who you are or what you're doing with your career, and even if you're not in the papers anymore or in the limelight, if you're an Augusta champion, you're a champion. Danny Willett, Charles Schwartzer, you're a champion.
Yeah.
Is that the same way in Britain? Do they know Todd Hamilton better than we know Todd Hamilton? Do they know Ben Curtis better than we know Ben Curtis?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, you know, it's funny because I would say yes and no. I mean, you threw out, of course, two of the most unlikely winners.
Right.
And certainly the Open Championship has produced, I would say, more of those, you know, I don't want to say fluky, but those surprising winners. I think the Open Championship has produced more of those than the Masters or even the U.S. Open or PGA Championship. So, yeah, I mean, you could go through it, and certainly I don't think a Todd Hamilton is going to be a superstar anywhere he goes. But yeah, I mean, I think other than the Masters, certainly if you're an international player, this one is the one that you want to win. Now, maybe the Masters has caught that for the international guys, or at least some of them, but the Open Championship, you know, certainly with its history and being the oldest one, has a special place for anyone. So, and then again, you throw in the fact that it's St. Andrews. I mean, I think we all remember the guys who win at St. Andrews. Like
right.
You're saying, we all remember the guys who win at Augusta National. And it's a small list of people who have been able to win at both places. So you throw that in, and it's certainly a huge opportunity to make some history next week.
When they give the claret jug, they say this is the champion golfer of the world, and maybe it's bravado, but at the same time, is the setup to get in, is it really a global championship? Is it really a bet? It really represents golf around the world more than the U.S. Open or the PGA or Augusta?
Yeah, I would say it probably does. I mean, you know, the U.S. Open certainly has qualifiers over in Europe, and Augusta obviously is, you know, opened up entries for winners of the Latin American Championship and the Asian Amateur Championship. So it's tried to get, you know, a world flavor as well. But yeah, I think the Open definitely has more of those guys, at least from Europe, who have a chance. And, you know, it's just such a unique major, of course, because A, it's the only one that's played outside the States, but B, it's just played on totally different style of golf. I mean, if you haven't played over there, it's like a different sport almost sometimes. So it's, you know, and at some level, I think some of the American guys who are not used to that might think, well, that's not how golf is supposed to be played. But for a lot, for the people over there and for the historians, they say that is how it's supposed to be played. So, yeah, it's certainly a unique test and a fun test. And, you know, I can't wait to get to watch it next week.
Talk about Rory, because there was a period of time he was winning a ton of these majors, and then he dropped off. We look at athletes all the time and go, what's happening? What's the deal? Is that a fair conversation to have about a golfer like Rory who wins every now and then, but he's not taking the majors anymore like he did back not that long ago?
Look, that's a great question. We just tackled that on a long-form podcast, whether or not, you know, what role should the majors play? Because on one hand, we love the fact that we have these four tournaments that kind of stand out, because it is a, you know, a year-round schedule, and you can kind of, you know, some of these tournaments can run into each other and they don't even separate themselves. So it's great to have four big ones that stand out. The problem is, though, right, you have a guy like Rory McIlroy who, since his last major win 8 years ago, which is stunning to think, he's won everything else imaginable. He's maintained such a high level, and he's had a ton of high finishes in the majors as well, but he hasn't won. And on one hand, it's unfair to him, but on the other hand, you know, it's kind of fair. He got all the credit for winning the four early in his career. So I just think it comes down to, it's a sample size thing. He probably picked off a few early, maybe a little quicker than anybody would have anticipated. And now in these last 8 years, he's come up empty more than anybody anticipated. And maybe it all kind of evens out. But yeah, it's definitely tough for Rory. It's certainly weighing on him. You can kind of see that, especially the Masters, because obviously he knows he needs to win that to complete the career Grand Slam. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation because these majors have bounced around. They weren't always the same. Two of the guys who completed the career Grand Slam that Rory's trying to catch, Gene Sarazen and Ben Hogan, they didn't even know they were completing the career Grand Slam. That wasn't even a thing back then. So it's a different microscope that these guys are under for sure. And so in that way, you know, I do kind of feel a little bad for Rory. But certainly, he's still got plenty more time, and he's playing great golf. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get it done.
This is going to be a weird question, but I have to ask it anyway. Given the traditional nature of the British crowd, St. Andrews and the deep tradition, if you're going to talk about past champions on that course, you have to talk about John Daly. Do they like John Daly? Do they love John Daly over there?
Yeah, they do. I mean, look, John Daly, it's amazing. He's a crowd favorite no matter where he goes, it seems. And that is one of the more unusual, matchups there, that John Daly won at the Open Championship. Yes. At St. Andrews. It's crazy. I mean, you know, you look back at it, he's wearing that hideous Reebok sweatshirt, and he had the mullet flowing, and Streaker ran out on 18 when he won. I mean, it was just such a crazy thing. And amazingly, he won those two majors in a 4-year span, and then he didn't really do much after that. But what a talent! And he'll be back there. He'll be wearing his crazy get-ups. He'll be going to the dinners with all the past champions. He loves it, and I think they love him, and he'll go as long as they invite him back.
It's so funny. Every time they do that British Open picture, it looks like he just like ran in at the last second. Like he was off off to the side and just kind of jumped into the picture and was like, "Hey, look at me. I'm with these guys."
Yeah. I know he'd be wearing like, I think he's worn like these crazy suits at different times. And he definitely stands out among the champions there. That's for sure. He's not what you picture when you look back at some of the other older golfers who've won there. But hey, he did it. He pulled it off, and that was a remarkable win.
Alex, great stuff. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a lot for joining us. Talk British Open.
You got it. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You got it. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, again on the British Open next week. Yeah, it's funny. You really have to pause and think about John Daly for a second, because he could have been a one major, whatever happened to that guy, you know, just being more known for being outlandish and, you know, with the outfits and whatnot, and just a guy that drove the ball a long way that caught a lucky weekend, right? Like just caught, like the golf universe just lined up perfectly. But you can't really say that when you have two majors. You can't say that anymore. Like we were mentioning Todd Hamilton and Ben Curtis. I don't think either one of those guys ever come close to winning a major again. They're both British Open champions. But Daly's won two, and when you win two, it's different. It just is. It's just different. And he didn't win just a British Open. He won a British Open at St. Andrews. And if you go back and remember that, he won it. Constantino Rocca was on the 18th hole needing a birdie to get into the playoff, just to get into a playoff. And he hit his second shot on what they call the Valley of Sin, which is the valley right before the green. Constantino Rocca hit his shot onto the green. It rolled down into the Valley of Sin. And they shot, as that ball came off the green, they showed a picture of John Daly and his girlfriend at the time. I don't think he was married. They were celebrating. He was getting hugs and kisses. And Constantino Rocca drained a long putt into the cover of birdie, fell to the ground, started screaming. Everybody was going nuts, and we had a playoff. And you thought the momentum was going with him, and Daly ended up winning in a playoff at St. Andrews. He won at St. Andrews of all places. I mean, every British Open is great in terms of winning it. It's a major, but St. Andrews, it's a totally different place. And John Daly's on the list of people who won there. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we close out this hour. Ron was telling me, you were telling me about John Daly hitting balls over a highway onto a football field. And what was it? Where was he doing that? In Arkansas or something?
I have no idea.
Idea?
Yeah, he hit him over a highway onto a high school football field. Yeah, I think so he was barefoot too.
He was across this like highway. What is it? I would say four-lane highway. Not four lanes, but like two lanes and then two lanes.
Cars going about 80 miles per hour.
Flying underneath it. He was kind of high up. Teed up a shot. There was a football field across the highway. And he was hitting drives into that football field. And we were just talking about this. What's amazing is these professional golfers never believe they're going to hit a crappy shot that's good.
No.
Like, they never... You and I get on that thing, we'd be like, we're going to hit a car.
Miss it. Someone's going to die.
And somebody's going to die.
And I'm going to jail.
And that's right. And then I'm going to prison. I'm going to cause a seven-car pileup. Some people are going to die. And then everybody's going to go, why this unbelievable tragedy? Why did this happen? And somebody's going to say, because Knucklehead was hitting drives across the highway trying to land it on that football field over there. And he missed. And now we've got four people dead in this pileup. But when you go to a golf tournament and a pro hits an errant shot, Tiger Woods does this a lot. He'll hit like an errant drive, and then the crowd, of course, they want to see Tiger, so they line up. They give him like a little gap.
Like that tunnel.
That little tunnel. And he goes, can you just move just a little bit? No, that's good. That's good. That's good. And I'm like, He's got a foot and a half. And he's like, no,
Why don't we just, next time that happens, they should all hold up like inner tubes.
Right, yeah.
And say, aim through the rings, Tiger,
go through the rings, yeah. Like, he's like, no, that's good, you're all good. I'm gonna rifle this 3-iron right in this little gap you've given me. No one's going to get hurt and it'll land on the green. They're great.